Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, this experience has been fantastic. I'm really thankful for the opportunity to be able to share what I've learned. I know that I'm still learning. I'm still growing. I've got a ways to go, but I hope that anyone who is looking to grow their business or, you know, maybe start working more professionally as a filmmaker, I hope that they can use something here to that end.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. In today's conversation, you will learn how filmmaking and entrepreneurship merged for guest mentor Coralinda and 10 entrepreneurial skills that fit with filmmakers like herself. You'll find out also what Cora has to say about them. Hi, Cora. How are you this afternoon?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing good too. Yeah, to give you a little bit more background about Cora before we start our conversation, Coralinda is an independent filmmaker and entrepreneur. As a writer, producer, director, Cora founded Space Dream Productions in 2013, releasing her first major film project in 2016 with her husband, Spaceship, a musician and filmmaker. Space Dream Productions is an independent film and music production company grounded in the idea that storytellers are ambassadors of humanity, tasked with sharing pieces of ourselves with each other. Filmmakers have the added responsibility of creating visual worlds around these stories. For this reason, Cora and Spaceship focus on films that not only entertain, but also aim to showcase pieces of humanity, all pieces of humanity, not just edgy indie or simply uplifting, but everything in between. The mission of Space Dream Productions is to amplify genuine pieces of life that may not always be front and center in large studio projects, and to elevate hardworking, exceptional artists in music and film. Since September 2016, over 50 projects have moved or are moving through Space Dream Productions. About 30 completed projects have received over 50 film festival acceptances internationally. They have earned 80 award nominations and 31 awards, including Best Director, awarded to both Coralinda and Spaceship for 3 different films, Best Animation, Best Drama Short, and Best Picture. So in 2019, we discussed in our first conversation that Cora was awarded the MECO Award for Courage, Innovation, and Excellence in a career in film. And she works to mentor other filmmakers through her podcast, Filmmaking, actually, which she started at the same time, right? In 2019?
I believe it. We started it in 2019.
Okay. Yeah, it's a challenge, isn't it, to have it be producing a podcast on a regular basis?
It is. I'm very lucky for Spaceship's assistance. He helps me with all the audio editing and everything for it.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for a complete list of their accolades and also their films, you can go to spacedreamproductions.com or spacedreamfilms.com. Just to mention a few of the movies, Names on the Wall, we talked briefly about this Vietnam War movie in our last conversation, Bringer of War, Spoons and Me. You've also directed and produced Mark and the Martian, Tidings, Dual Flush, and Gone Gray. And there's some films that are coming out, including Catching the Light, Comic Relief, In Herself, an entitled Holocaust documentary, and To Catch the Light. So check out those films and follow Coralinda. And she's up to a lot of great things in the world. And she's going to be telling you at the end of our conversation how she can help you. So in 2019, like I said, you started the Filmmaking Actually podcast. You describe how you came to filmmaking by doing all the parts of making a film, from set production and set designs to rigging and building stages, product design, and everything in between, some of which we heard about in our first conversation. And out of those experiences, you gained lots of insight into filmmaking and found a love for directing. Tell us when you realized you were a filmmaker and decided to start Space Dream Productions.
Excuse me. Well, I do want to make sure, I know that was a lot. So Spacey and I work as a team. And for some projects, we direct them together as co-directors. Some of them he directs, some of them I direct. So on that list of films, there's some that were directed by him and I produced, some that were co-directed by us, but led by him, and some that were directed by me. So it's all on our website, but I just wanted to make sure that.
Oh, that's good.
Credit is due because he's incredible as well.
Yeah. And you two are interchangeable in many different roles. And it seems like you have both your fingerprints on all that you're doing.
Yes, very much so. We, to quote Jerry Maguire, he completes me. Hopefully I complete him. You know, there's a collaboration, a very kind of yin-yang dynamic between us.
Yeah, it's a beautiful synergy. Amazing. So after getting married to Spaceship, let's just talk about him for a minute, and we can talk more about how you became a filmmaker. After getting married to Spaceship, you kind of continued to chase your dreams together, and things skyrocketed, as you mentioned. Did your pace of life shift after Spaceship joined Space Dream Productions? Were you a filmmaker at that point, or where did this all come together?
That's actually a great question. I don't want to say I took a break, because we literally filmed Names on the Wall the day after we got married. That was an adventure. So we eloped, and then we got married like with a, you know, big get together and all of that several months later. So I was kind of planning that and making all of our decorations. And we kind of agreed that I could take a couple months off, because we had individually been working. Before that point, I would kind of spend a couple months just kind of being the housewife / wedding planner for us. And he would be more focusing on work. So in that sense, it slowed down for a little bit, but that was only however many months that was. And I was so hands-on in making all of our wedding decor and putting together all the flowers and all of that stuff. That was kind of all I had space for in those months. But the rest of it, I think it's kind of been like a snowball, you know, kind of like going down a mountain that just kind of like, as once the momentum gets going, things just kind of add to it. And it's just kind of, I think, kind of organically grown over the years.
Mm, beautiful. So there wasn't one instrumental moment where you determined that you became a filmmaker? Was there a defining moment?
Oh gosh, I don't mean to hesitate. I'm just trying to think. I mean, I kind of decided, because I was kind of on the more corporate path when I started working in events. And it was very slow and gradual. I kind of started making friends with filmmakers. I started working with them a little bit. I was, like I said, you know, apprenticing and day playing. And
where were you living at this time?
I was living in LA.
Okay.
Yeah. And I will say, just because everybody here is like, oh, you have to live in LA. Living in LA has pros and cons. I was in a very fortunate situation in that my circle of friends were largely really good people and very supportive. And there wasn't a lot of the problems that go with living in LA among that circle of people. But you don't have to, especially now between the collaboration on the internet, just the amount of independent projects out there, you don't need to be in LA to fall in with people and learn and grow. That's, you know, definitely larger cities are more likely, like Orlando, Tampa, Atlanta, you know, but even in like the middle of Ohio, I have filmmakers who live in Cincinnati, filmmaker friends who live in Cincinnati, Ohio, and, you know, they're out there. So it just kind of grew organically. And I loved it. And I think one day I was just kind of like, this is what I want to do with my life. This is, yeah.
Nice. And how did you arrive at the Space Dream Productions name?
So I too had asked Spaceship where his name came from, and he told me the Sean Lennon song, and I did have a crush on him, but also I also loved the song. I loved the lyrics. I loved the message that went behind it. And I was trying to come up with a name for the company. And I feel like my friend Callie kind of chimed in on it when we were talking about it. And I came up with this Space Dream Productions as kind of like at the end of our back and forth. And I told myself, you know, even if nothing happens with this guy, even, you know, because crushes come and go, but yeah. I loved the story. The Sean Lennon song wasn't going to go anywhere. So
it would always be a good story.
Yeah, no, it always is what it's going to be. So yeah, so that's how I came up with the name.
Okay. Oh, excellent. How did your past work experiences help you to start the company more sure-footed than you might have had you not had all those skills working up to it?
I definitely had a bit of an advantage in that I did have a more corporate background. I had started working as an intern like an assistant type person at my grandfather's law firm. When I was very young, I was answering phones, making copies, doing filing. So I was aware of both the work dynamic and the work office environment, you know, what it's like to have a boss, what it's like to do work and get paid for it, what it's like, you know, you can't spend all day sitting at the coffee bar. You have to actually go to your desk and do something. And I, having that kind of instilled in me a work ethic that I think translated kind of through anything that I did. I was aware of budgeting. I was aware of costs and expenses. You know, that's great to want to make, you know, be paid $1 million for something, but where is that $1 million coming from? Who's doing the work to make that $1 million?
Yeah.
People's salaries are based on the amount of money the company's making. And obviously, you know, if you're a multi-billion-dollar company, that's different. It's a different conversation. That just is a conversation on how do you allocate the money you have. But if you're anything else, if you're anything from a mid to small range company, there's a lot that goes into it. And I think it helped me understand, like, I had taken classes in marketing and in PR and in finance and basic ones. And all of those things just gave me enough to not be super lost. Like I still, you know, work with an accountant. I still have to call a tax professional. I still have a lawyer, you know, like all of these different things, several lawyers for, you know, employment or for entertainment. Like I know.
For contract law, for, copyright and yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, I know enough to know that I don't know it all and that's okay.
Yeah.
And one of my mentors said it to me best. I was very overwhelmed trying to do it all by myself at one point. And she said that there is no reason to kill yourself doing it all. You need to work with people who know how to do it while you grow. And she, you know, I was doing the whole like hustle till I burnt out type thing. And she was like, I get 8 hours of sleep a night. And I knew how much she accomplished and her company was like insanely booming and doing phenomenal. And I was like, how do you get 8 hours of sleep a night? And she's like, because I do my job during the day and I go home and I go to bed. Like it's, you know, like it's okay. It reminded me that, you know, I've heard people who are like, oh, I only sleep 4 hours a night. And you know, if that works for you, fine, but you might want to look at why are you, and don't get me wrong. I burn the candle at both ends sometimes, but then I stop and I take a break and I catch up on my sleep and it's a balance.
Yeah. When you've got a lot of pressure and deadlines. Yeah. So when you started, how many full-time, part-time, and contract people did you start with? And where are you at now with those people?
Well, when I started, it was me. we had the cast and crew of Names on the Wall, but it was basically just me and the writer of Names on the Wall, Nick Gambino. He was kind of in, because we did lose our funding, we ended up, he and I kind of set up another investor to do just that one project. So he was kind of in as like a partner on that project. But as far as keeping the company going, it was Spacey Jokes he married into the company. So, you know, he and I would work on stuff. He had other films, Spaceship did, that I would help on, and they kind of would go under the Space Dream kind of umbrella. So it really was just like us as we were kind of starting, and then we'd bring people in for projects, and that was it. I want to say, was it 2019 was a big year for me. It was 2018 or 2019 that Jazz, as she'd volunteered with us on a couple of projects.
Your assistant?
Yeah. She basically wrote to me and said, I want to be your assistant. This is what I think I can offer. This is what I think, you know, I can provide. And we had her kind of start almost as like a contractor for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then we had contractors on projects in and out. That's kind of a long-winded answer, way of saying we didn't really have anybody until last year.
Okay.
And now we have 4 employees, an intern, 4 partners, and then contractors on various projects.
Okay. That's a lot to manage.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you've done all the jobs. So, you know, what are the 3 biggest lessons you've learned about cash flow since your startup in 2013?
Oh, goodness, that it's vital. I had learned very early on in my business career that no one makes money. Printing presses make money. People earn money. You have to provide a valuable service. You have to price it at a fair price. You have to market it in a way that makes people interested in getting it. And you have to do the work of providing that service, getting it into the hands of the people who need it, and then collecting the payment for it. So that has kind of always been my rock as far as managing finance lines. And it's always been, you know, when cash flow is slow or trickling, to just get busy making things, get busy finding new clients, get busy doing outreach, you know, even if that outreach is just sending people messages like, hey, you know, how's it going? Is there anything I can help you with? Like just being very proactive and not, there's sort of an illusion, especially in the film industry, that when you're good enough, you can just sit back and everybody comes to you. Which, you know, I'm sure, yeah, Tom Holland is probably getting bombarded with scripts right now. But if he were to stop and just sit there forever, he probably wouldn't be bombarded with scripts forever. He has to keep working. He has to keep picking scripts he wants to do and doing them. And the same thing goes for any industry. You never can just run forever. I mean, look at companies like Sears and Kmart that we probably all expected to just be those Macy's, those big buildings in the malls forever.
Yeah, right.
And they dried up for some reason. I have no idea why. I'm not involved in their management. But whether it was a choice or whether it was an unfortunate decline over the years, some companies continue to grow and some companies don't. And it takes an active participation and a management. And there really is no such thing as just sitting on your laurels and resting on your gold, because even the Roman Empire fell and the most richest people in the Roman Empire are gone. So yeah, that's kind of tragic sounding, but.
No, I think it really drives home your point that you're kind of as good as your best film at the moment and you got to keep working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any entrepreneur of any kind, you always have to keep doing something. You can't just stop.
Yeah. You got to keep producing work. So you have a refreshingly practical approach to filmmaking, which is what your Filmmaking Actually podcast is about. I was listening to a number of different episodes, and I was just really like, you must have some really great time management skills and ways in which you handle details that are pretty work really well for you. And I was just wondering if you would have any tips for us.
Sure. So a big thing for me is a daily to-do list. I always accomplish more when I make one, and finding out the way that works for you. Some people like bullet journals. Some people use apps. There's at like websites like Asana or Trello or Monday.com where you can create these sort of like time management things. You also can just literally use a pen and paper, just grab one of those little notepads from the dollar store or whatever and use it to write it down, your tasks. I try to separate things between long-term planning, things that are going to become priority soon, and things that are priority.
Oh, and nice. Yeah.
That kind of breakdown. So I'm always looking into the future, because otherwise, you know, if you're only looking at now, you don't have a future. So that balance, and then just managing a daily task list that takes care of everything I need to do for that day. And then being conscientious of deadlines and, you know, maybe my task list is 20 things, but if I only do 10 of them, it's not the end of the world. But if that 11th thing is going to be a problem, if I don't do it, I need to prioritize my day and make sure I finish that 11th thing, or I need to stay up a little later and make sure I actually accomplish that task. I'm also very big on checklists. All of our employees and contractors have, I guess not our contractors, but all of our employees have checklists that are, these are the tasks of your job. This is what is expected of you each week. You know, when you start, first thing you do is X, Y, Z. Then on Monday, make sure you do 1, 2, 3 and all that stuff just to kind of keep it, because you know, you can only remember so much and it's so easy, especially with alerts on your phone and emails flying at you all day and social media and all this stuff kind of happening.
Yeah.
You don't have like a grounded point of this is what I need to do today. It's really easy to get distracted.
Yeah. I was talking with sports psychologist Scott Welly, and he just produced his 10th book, and it was about extraordinary results. And he had said, you know, with the task list, he said he gets like so mad, like get rid of the task list and focus on strategies with the task list. So I thought I've started doing that because I'm like a task list person. And so now that I've started adding strategy to it, I guess I automatically did the strategy but I hadn't thought about it quite like that. And I was just wondering, what is your thought about strategies and tactics?
Well, there's a couple of different things. One is if you only strategize, you're going to miss the day to day. And that is also a problem. You can't really do one or the other. Another thing is, it depends on how close you are to the immediate product. Like if you are the owner of a bakery that's got 20 different bakers baking things, you need to be aware of the overhead costs and the, you know, material supply chains and the ingredients and the developments and the designs and the kind of wide scale strategizing for the whole bakery.
Yeah.
But if you're an individual baker, you need to know by 12 o'clock, I need to have done X, Y, and Z, or I'm not going to have any cakes baked by the end of the day.
Right. So the strategy is do these pieces to get to the end result.
Yeah. It's the strategy is kind of like, where are you going long-term? Not, I need to bake 5 cakes today.
Well, you can make the strategy in for the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is what I was referring to, like with our daily task list.
Yeah.
Like when you're prioritizing, he was just mentioning to add a strategy for where you want to make sure that you are by the end of the day.
Yeah. I think it sounds like he and I might be using kind of different concepts for the words strategy and like daily targets.
Yeah.
And I think he and I are probably saying the same thing with different words, maybe.
Yeah, I think you are.
Yeah. It is important to have a goal. You know, it's like you can't, having a daily to-do list for no purpose, yes, that's maddening.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you wake up, you answer emails, you do this, you do that. Well, why are you doing it? Well, yeah. I'm doing it because at the end of this amount of time, I want to be at this place.
That's right.
Your strategy. And then your task list is your steps of getting there, whatever that is, whether it's, you know, you want to bake 5 cakes. Okay, here's your recipes. Here's, you know, everything you have to do to get there. Or it's, I want to grow my business to this profit range. Okay, how do you get there? Like there's that kind of breakdown.
Yeah. So Space Dream Films is a part of Space Dream Productions, an independent film and music production company grounded in the idea that all storytellers are ambassadors of humanity, tasked with sharing their voices. Filmmakers have the added responsibility of creating the visual worlds around these stories. And for this reason, Space Dream Productions focuses on films that entertain and aim to showcase pieces of humanity. So could you describe a few of the 50 plus projects that underscore your mission? You know, one or two?
Let's see. Well, we have Names on the Wall, which is the idea is that, you know, the Vietnam War was a war of governments, and that film is a story of soldiers and kind of accentuates the difference between the two. The next one that we did was a film called Bringer of War, which is about the ridiculous things that we say to women and what that means if you kind of took it to like the most absurd, like, extreme of that, like some things as simple as, oh, you're going to eat that. And it's like, A, what if I am? And B, what if I'm not? Like, I am an adult. I'm perfectly capable of putting this cupcake back in my fridge and not eating it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, what's it going to do? Come to life and eat me? Well, yeah, that's what happens. It becomes an animation and the cupcake comes and, you know, she gets saved by an army of carrots and it's a satire.
Okay.
We have...
That's really a great point is, I mean, that's what I really enjoy, I guess, about your work is you're taking what's out there and you're looking at it from a really different perspective.
That means a lot to me. Thank you. That's important to us. All of our films are... I mean, we did a film about a dancer who lost her hearing and had to learn how to dance again without being able to hear. We did a film about a former teenage dad taking his now teenage daughter to work with him. And he's a plumber. And his 13-year-old daughter is not exactly interested in going into strangers' houses and looking at their toilets. and it's about, you know, kind of how we see our kids and how we see our parents and how we see ourselves and that relationship. That's called Dual Flush. We did a film called Are You Positive? Which is a story of a young woman who is taking a pregnancy test. And we never see if the test is positive or negative. We only see that she's devastated. And we wanted that to kind of be a conversation starter for what taking a pregnancy test can mean for different women and what the results can mean for different women. A negative test could be as traumatic as a positive test for some people. A test that was positive, yeah, now negative can be traumatic. A test that's positive when it that can cause so many complications in life can be traumatic. A test that you desperately want to be positive that's negative can be traumatic. So we never actually see what she sees. We just see her reactions. And there's a little bit of conversation that happens with it. So we did the Mark and the Martian, which was a spaceship film, and that he kind of led the story and directing on that. And it's about an agoraphobic singer-songwriter who lives alone in his house. And he gets visited by a young alien who kind of crash lands in his living room and decides that this is now her house and he needs to leave. It's about, you know, why do we make the choices that we make in life and what barriers do we have because we decided they were a barrier versus what really is a barrier. And then we explored that with a sequel called Mark and Dot, which was released as a web series. It's about 15 episodes. And the alien's name is Dot. So it was Mark and the Martian. And then Mark and Dot is kind of the sequel. Catch up with him a year later, you know, and he's homeless. He's been living on the streets for a year because she threw him out of his house. And where did he go? And whatever happened with these dreams that he was, you know, ended Mark and the Martian, like, I'm going to go chase my dreams. Well, then what happened? And it has to do with what it means to actually chase your dreams and how do you get there? And we released some projects that Spaceship had started before he was married to me. So they're more his films. One is called Chrissy and Cohen, and it is an animated documentary of a real conversation between a young boy and his mother. It's a 6-year-old British boy telling you what a mother is. He is defining a mother. It's just very, very, it's like 2 minutes. It's very adorable. And it just explores kind of how our kids see moms. And we did one called Teacher Student, which I helped him with when we were dating from a design point for some of the kind of like recreation scenes, but the actual interview and the story and all of his, that was a film that he did. He had a friend who was an art teacher who was undergoing chemotherapy for cancer. And she wanted to make a documentary about her life because she didn't know what was going to happen. And this is an excerpt of that feature-length documentary that's a short form, and it's just her talking about this student that she had as a teacher. And it's called Teacher Student because it's kind of a reflection of who's the teacher and who's the student. And this girl was brought into her class who was in a wheelchair and was in a helmet. And she was like, you don't belong in an art class. Like, what are you doing? Like, she couldn't even hold a paintbrush. And then it's not only is that a horribly ableist and very discriminatory perspective, you know, it's a very beautiful conversation that she was so open about how wrong she was and how she kind of had this erroneous idea about this other human being and how what happened that changed her perspective and how she then saw the young girl after that. And so there's that documentary.
There's so many.
So yeah, I mean, there's 50 of them, so I can, I'll stop.
Well, you've reinforced kind of what your mission is, right, of how you look at the projects and what stories you gravitate toward very precisely. Why did you find a need to separate out Space Dream Films from your production company? Or are they separate?
Kind of. I mean, right now, Spacey and I kind of do everything. Space Dream Productions is the actual official company, and I'm the president of Space Dream Productions, and Spacey is the executive vice president of Space Dream Productions. But we would like to eventually grow to a point maybe where Spacey is specifically the head of Space Dream Music and I'm specifically the head of Space Dream Films. What has happened kind of, again, organically is I've been more involved in some of the music projects than maybe we originally would think that I would be. And he is a brilliant filmmaker. So we haven't, on paper, we have that layout of their Space Dream Productions, which is the umbrella company for Space Dream Films and Space Dream Music.
But I see.
It really all is Space Dream Productions right now. And it really is me, Spaceship, and then the rest of our team.
Yeah. So long term, you've got the vision for how this is all going to play out. And you're slowly kind of building the infrastructure as you're going along.
Yeah. And, you know, we may end up only keeping Space Dream Productions as a specific, like the overall company, and maybe Space Dream Films as a department of Space Dream Productions and Space Dream Music as another department of Space Dream Productions. Like we'll get there.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've won a ton of accolades. What are your thoughts about these? You've got 30 completed projects, which have received over 50 film festival acceptances, and you've earned 80 awards nominations and 31 awards. What are your thoughts about all the accolades?
It's kind of unreal, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's funny because Names on the Wall first took off and we got into like 1/3 of the festivals we submitted to. Granted, we didn't get into Sundance. We didn't get into, you know, any of the really big ones. It is a longer film. It's about 25 minutes long, and that is harder to program. But I've seen longer short films at Sundance, so I know that's not the only reason. But so some of those are more mid-range festivals. We got so bombarded with awards with the first film, we kind of wondered, like, are we going to be a one-hit wonder? Well, we didn't. I did. I wondered, like a one-hit wonder? Like, what is this?
Yeah.
So that was why I did Bringer of War. It was just to see if I could do it again. Mm. And it was not the same resources. I spent years developing and planning and budgeting and financing Names on the Wall. Bringer of War, I put together in about 3 days with no budget, filmed it in 6 hours in my friend's apartment. And
wow,
together the edit, like it was very differently done. It was more done like a web series than an actual film, but it also got into a bunch of festivals. It also was nominated for several awards. And then as soon as it won Best Animation, I was like, I guess awards operate sort of as like reassurance.
And yeah.
You know, it's nice. I always say, you know, you need to believe in yourself. Don't ask for anybody else for permission. And that's true. But it is nice as you go to have somebody else say, hey, you know what you're doing. Good job. Congratulations. This was good.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that moment of validation that, you know, and there's so many things that, you know, people like scorn validation, or they tell you you should never crave validation, which is true. But validation, that acknowledgement as part of putting yourself out there, to have someone else say, hey, I see you. Good job.
Yeah. And it's people in your field.
Yeah. It's valid to receive a peer, you know, nod and to say, hey, good work.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever made something solely with the intention of we're going to win awards. Like Bringer of War, I was just curious, like, I wonder what's going to happen. But I knew just from the scale that we were making it, it wasn't going to be like Names on the Wall. But even like when we do the 48-hour film projects, I forget that those are competitions. Like people enter those because they're trying to win. I do the 48-hour film project because it's an opportunity to learn, to practice, to try new things. And we just do it. And then we submit it. And then I remember, I'm like, oh, I think the only time I was ever really focused was there was one actress who really wanted, all she wanted was to be nominated for Best Actress. So we wrote her a very dramatic, very deep role that we knew could highlight her skills.
Mm.
And then there was another actress who we've worked with before for a different film that was also a 48-hour. And I really just wanted her to get nominated because
oh, nice.
How incredible and how complex she is as an actress. And I felt like she really deserved it. But even that was to get somebody else, you know, the validation. We usually submit them and then it's like, oh yeah, that's right. This is for, you know, this, we just want to make movies. And
yeah,
figure out how to do them. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. So I found this list on the Film Fund that, you know, of 10 reasons filmmaking and entrepreneurship require the same skills. And I thought it would be a nice way to highlight your skill sets and also get your perspective on them. Should we do them?
All right, here we go.
Here we go. Okay. So number one, concepts are nothing without proper execution. I think that, you know, was something we talked about earlier in management, time management and skills. You've got that in spades. Okay. Number two, films and startups both offer a value proposition. So it's, you got to create something of value that other people see value in that they're willing to pay for.
Yeah, that one in specific is something that I have a little bit of a different perspective on than
the Let's hear it.
Film world normally. So usually the way films get priced is someone comes along, looks at the script and the pitch. There's nothing has been made. Nothing has been done. Nothing has been executed. And they say, I could probably sell that for this much money.
Oh, so they pick a number just based on
a number, and they say, this is what it can sell for. So then that number goes back to the producers and the producers say, great, we have to make a profit. So we're going to make the movie for this much less than that. So we can make this much of a profit, which is very safe. I'm going to say boring business. It's also very wrong to be bold and say, because
that doesn't make sense to me, because, you know, every business owner, they have to like know what their costs are.
Yep.
And to know how much money you go for.
So what happens in the film world is they're told, lower your cost, make people work for free, pay less money, don't pay for those things, beg, barter, and steal, don't pay yourself, max out your credit cards, use your friends, which is from an accounting perspective, like strictly business. And I apologize, I'm going to go off on this. This is something I feel very strongly about. An accounting perspective, if you have a shop and you know, you're going to bake in your kitchen. Okay, well, you have the lights on in your kitchen. You're using your oven. Maybe you're using the flour out of your cupboard and all that stuff. Those are your things that you're contributing. You didn't spend any money on them from the business side, but as from an accounting side, if you were to look at the line items, that flour, that electric bill, that gas range oven, those all cost money. So you could tell somebody, I spent no money, but that's not true because you did. And even if it was just somebody showing up and baking a cake for you, that person's time, their knowledge, that has value, that has a dollar value. So when people push these filmmakers to make the film for less than it costs to sell, the conversation that I think needs to be had is with the salesperson of, I'm sorry, I thought selling movies is your job. So to make people want my movie, that's your job, not to show the movie that you know people want that you can put in front of them and have them buy.
Right.
That's not how I literally once had a salesperson say, I said, okay, so if I was going to make a cake, and if I know the going price for cakes is X, and I'm going to make a cake and it's going to have imported vanilla and it's going to be organic, perfectly clean flour and use free range eggs and raw milk. And it's going to be this beautiful cake decorated spectacularly, but it's going to cost more than X. He replied without missing a beat, don't make the cake.
Wow.
And that to me is absolute madness. And it is probably one of the most oppressive and crippling mentalities in the film industry, possibly in the business world, because
I think it is in the business world. I think it's a major problem in the industry of entrepreneurship is people don't understand the costs of things. And they get behind and fund these big ideas, but they don't work out the details enough ahead of time for everybody to understand what it's going to take to produce something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You and I are so much in agreement here. Yeah. Yeah.
And what it does is you get into things like slave wages of, you know, where of exporting jobs to other countries. So you can take advantage of economic disparity between the rate of hiring a person in one country versus hiring them in another. You end up with low cost supplies, which result in lower quality products, because the bottom line is the holy grail to everybody. How much does it cost? How much does it cost? Lower the cost, drop the overhead, make more money. But that's not what you're supposed to do as part of the world. You're supposed to make something of quality that has value and give it to people in a fair exchange for what that thing is that you're giving them. And if you have a problem with that last part, the problem is not your overhead. The problem is your marketing and PR.
Yeah.
Because that is how you sell something. You sell something by communicating the value of it, by having people understand it. It's not by manipulating people. It's not by lying to them. PR is not supposed to be manipulation and lies. It's supposed to be, if you have a cake that's this amazing and it tastes fantastic, find the people who are interested in that or work to educate people as to why your cake is worth the price. There's a perfect example. It's a shoe company. It's called Atom Shoes, A-T-O-M. And they sell shoes in quarter sizes because our feet are not half sizes. Feet are whatever size they were when they stopped growing.
Yeah.
And they have different widths and everything. And their marketing line is, if they were cheap, they'd be cheap.
Boom. There you know, it is. Good point.
Simple. And yeah. They're marketing and they sell out. These are expensive shoes and they sell out. They're not even very, in my opinion, I don't think they're very like nice looking. Like they're not like a style of shoe. They're very basic,
yeah.
But they sell out because they have really good marketing and really good PR and they utilize that. And I just try to imagine somebody coming along that says, you need to charge less. You need to drop your overhead. You need to use lower quality products. You need to stop making so many different sizes. That's too hard. In which case, the service they provide, which is well-fitting sneakers, which is a problem for people, not having properly fitting shoes is actually bad. It messes up your posture. It can cause health problems. Like it's so many things.
Yeah.
So one little thing only exists because these entrepreneurs said, I'm not going to go cheap. I'm going to deliver something of quality. And I'm sure, you know, they could charge hundreds of dollars. I mean, other sneakers, you can buy some sneakers for hundreds of dollars. These shoes are like $100, which
yeah.
is a lot.
Yeah. But,
you know, anyway.
It's going right lately.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Number three, filmmakers must also understand digital marketing and community management.
No. Producers, marketing teams, very specific people on the filmmaking sort of scope need to understand that. If you are working as an independent contractor, if you're working freelance, then yes, because you need to know how to market yourself. But as a general independent person who's like kind of
as a filmmaker,
as a yeah, depending on where what you
well, part of this is kind of building your audience for
yeah.
the films,
and that is the producer's job. Because if you're a director, you're technically a filmmaker, but the audience is not your job if you're the director.
I see. Oh, that's a good clarification.
Yeah.
Okay. So number four, short films represent entertainment funding, minimum MVPs or minimum viable products.
I see short films as a multitude of things. And I have a whole podcast episode where I talk about kind of like how you develop a film. Short films can either be a proof of concept for a larger project. They can be a calling card for a company. Like for us, Names on the Wall shows what we can do. All of our short films show what we can do. Our feature films are bigger budgets. They're more work. We're only getting investment in those projects because people trust us. They know, okay, good, you can do it. Short films to me are kind of like free samples or Sunday brunch at a restaurant or a 30-day free trial or something that enables people to see you and what you're capable of. And they have lots of different uses depending on, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Number five, bootstrapping a venture is like producing a micro or low budget film.
That goes back to the whole conversation we just had about how much money it takes to actually do something.
Yeah. Okay, good. Six, filmmakers and entrepreneurs wear multiple hats.
The producer is the person who actually makes the thing go. They are the one who not only is putting everybody on the train, they're making sure the train is there, they're making sure the train has tracks, they're making sure the tracks go to the destination, they're making sure the tracks function, they're making sure there is coal to burn. They are doing all of that stuff, and it requires a very flexible mindset.
Yeah.
If you have a very specialist job, like if you are a sound mixer, you need to know your job. You may need to know how to promote yourself, how to network, how to make sure the contracts you're signing are valid, how to manage your own finances. But as a general rule, filmmaking wise, you only need to know how to do your job. If you're a set dresser, it helps to understand the other departments, and it makes a better team when you know what the other people are doing, what they're supposed to be doing, and how, you know, you can kind of work together on it. But I think that's a very sweeping statement that might not be true for everybody.
Well, it's just focusing on being a filmmaker. Like, you need to understand the finances. You need to understand the legal issues.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead.
So I'm wondering how they're using the word filmmaker, because that's a very broad term. And everyone who works in film doesn't need to know all of those things. As a director, I need to be aware of the budget, but my job as the director is to tell the story. The budget isn't my problem.
Yeah.
So I need to know from the producer, what's the budget? I need to be able to have a conversation with them and say, if you want me to tell the story the way you're asking me to, we need to talk about the budget, because this is how much this costs. I need to be innovative. I need to be able to come up with other ways to tell the story at the same level. I need to be able to think of ways I can execute things that might cost less.
Yeah.
But my job is not to redo the budget. My job is to have a conversation with the producer where I can give them A, B options.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I think they're referring to here. Like, as entrepreneurs, we have to be aware of all the moving parts.
Yeah. I think this checklist is probably geared towards producers, which is a very specific piece, because it, and I just want to make sure for anybody listening, if like, oh, I'm a filmmaker, and they're listening to this checklist thinking, oh, I'm a filmmaker, I have to do all these things. If you're a set dresser, you should understand, you know, the relationship between the color of the items in the set and the types of colored lights being used, and how, you know, different fabric style and prints is going to read on camera. You have to know all that stuff, but your job is to dress the set. They really need to know, like, you need to know what your budget is. You need to be able to manage the budget for your department. But I think this checklist is probably geared towards the producer, who is really the business person behind the actual
project. Well, it's a comparison of how entrepreneurs are similar in filmmaking.
Yeah.
Some of the qualities. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So number seven, have you experienced imposter syndrome?
Oh, of course.
Okay. Number eight, we have to know about basic accounting, finance, and tax laws. And so your background has really been very telling about you learn those things as you went along. Yeah. Very entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
Number nine, having an understanding of intellectual property and copyright laws. Another thing that's really important. And it's also part of wearing multiple hats. So I would put a lot of these under wearing multiple hats.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, when you sign an independent contractor agreement, or at least the ones that we use, you are attesting to the fact that all of the work is original to you and you're not violating anyone else's intellectual property.
Yeah.
And you are granting usage rights to the company that you're doing the work for, because especially in film, intellectual property law is very important and copyright is very important.
Yeah.
But again, yeah, I think this is a great checklist for a producer.
Okay. And the last one is filmmakers and entrepreneurs have big dreams. Oh. So, you know, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Okay. What are your greatest aspirations for the remainder of this year?
Oh, goodness. We have a feature film currently in called Catching the Light, which we would like to have finished. That's been a wonderful challenge. And we have about, to count really quickly, four more features that are actively in development. The scripts are being written, they're being finalized and locked and getting ready to pitch. So those, I would say, having those finished and having the pre-production in place and finalizing those for production. And then we have a feature film called Comic Relief. That's one of those that just got a grant from the Montana Film Office, the Big Sky Film Grant. Yeah, we're very honored about that. And we would like to finalize everything else we need to finalize so that we can get on set. And I would love to have that filmed by the end of this year.
Nice. And I had mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that there's some services that you would like to share with or offer to our listeners.
Sure.
And what are those?
Awesome. Yeah. So within Space Dream Productions, we kind of have a couple different areas that we focus on. One, as I'm sure there's lots of fellow small business owners and larger business owners who listen to this, a big part of the world today is social media and content creation.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to be a business owner when your job is maybe to run a construction company. And now all of a sudden you have to figure out how to make content that reflects your construction company when you're not a content creator, you're a construction company manager. So, and hiring social media managers and hiring content creators can get very expensive. Mm-hmm. So we have various packages that we provide where we basically come for a day and we take a ton of photos, we shoot a bunch of video, we do a bunch of behind the scenes, and we basically can stack you with anywhere from about 1 to 4 months worth of content within this shoot so that you're just ready to go, and we'll do a consultation, get you set up with just the basics of social media so you can know how to do it, or like, you know, assign it to your receptionist to manage or something simple like that. So that is something that we have available on our services page.
Great.
And then there's the film from a filmmaker side, we have the Filmmaking Actually podcast, which is always free. And by the time...
Yeah, it's really terrific. You've got so many... I think it's good for business owners too. I mean, I just really... Yeah, I really like the volume of detail that you go into.
I appreciate that. I think it's, you know, if sharing it can help other people, I've only gotten, I mean, we spoke about this when we first connected, but I've only gotten as far as I've gotten because of mentorships, because of people supporting me. And I feel like, you know, if I can make whatever knowledge I have available to other people where they can get it at their own time. You know, we have it's available as a podcast. It's available on YouTube with subtitles if you prefer to, if you're that type of learner, or if you prefer to read, we have it as a blog post as well, just to kind of make it as
for available. All learners.
Yeah. And then the other thing that we offer is we're setting up a Patreon account where basically, we're looking to be able to foster a community of filmmakers. All of the content will be available so that even if you're not actively involved, you can at least watch the Zoom calls, have access to everything that we're doing, see what we're doing. And then everybody, no matter what your monthly tier is above that, will have access to Ask Me Anything Zoom calls. We'll do like audition feedback where like an actor can come on and perform a scene and we'll analyze it with them and coach them through it with an audience who can ask questions. We'll break down log lines. We'll do script readings. Like the whole point will really be to kind of foster a community of filmmakers and creatives and hopefully provide a network where they can connect together as well.
Excellent. So you can find the information that they need at spacedreamfilms.com. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you so much. This has really been a valuable, meaningful conversation, and I appreciate getting to know you a little bit better, Kuara.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really been an honor to be here.
Great. Thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de l'entrepreneur, brother from another mother. And thank you all for tuning in. I hope you can take some action on the resources that Kuara has offered. All right. See you next week.
Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a We Mentor Lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.